TGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 445, recorded on November 2nd, 2016. Welcome to the 445th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and a 278th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, week two of, maybe week two for me and Scott, maybe not for TJ, of Civilization VI. And I will say there are certain things that are very irritating about it. I'm pretty sure you can guess what it is. One thing that's very irritating. And that is, of course, diplomacy, in which you can make someone promise to do something, but then you're going to break it right away, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because Casus Belli is supposed to be that, you know, if I tell you to stop converting my cities, and you go ahead and convert my cities, and you agree to do it, and you convert my cities anyway, it should be a pretext to war. And I shouldn't get any sort of warmonger benefit, because I told them, stop doing it. And... you know, it's remarkably one-sided. And the thing that bothers me is that diplomacy was a real problem in Civ 5, and they never patched it. So I have no hopes for them patching this either.
Well, there are some other bugs and exploits. Like, if you're in the industrial era, you can buy this, like, army of SAMs. And then you sell them for more money than that you had bought them. And so you could continue that process and get yourself a lot of gold. And then there's another bug where you can offer to buy a city, and it's like they'll last for like 20,000 gold. And then you reduce it by 2, and then I think you go out and the back in, and then it shows up as 2 gold, so you can buy a city for 2 gold.
But see, those are exploits, though. Those are going to get patched. The diplomacy thing is not going to get patched, you know, because of the way they constructed it. There must be some obscure way that people could possibly exploit that diplomacy, but it's just not fair. And it makes it annoying when I have streams of these guys coming in to convert my cities and have to build apostles and apostles and apostles and apostles. Yeah. Come on, you know. Or I'd rather use apostles than I would, because you can level those guys up immediately. You can't really level up the Inquisitors. But it's just frickin' annoying. So have you found a favorite civilization yet?
I'm liking China. I like being able to
build a great wall.
boost the wonder building with the builders.
Yeah.
That's really useful. And I like the cannons or bombards that don't require niter.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
How about you, TJ?
I still dig Germany the most.
Because they're big warmongers and they can just beat the crap out of everybody.
production value. I really enjoy the Hansa, and I really enjoy being able to build an extra district in all of my cities.
That is nice.
I prefer either Greece, because they have the ability to have that one extra wild card policy, which is really nice. Gives you a lot of flexibility. And, you know, I also like Germany because you get a bonus when attacking city-states.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, before you discover those other civilizations, let me just go womp on Stockholm for a bit and take them as a city, because they're sitting on a spot I want. So, yeah. You know, that's the question of the week. Are you playing Civ 6? And if so, what's your favorite Civ?
There you go.
I'm pretty sure they don't have the Koreans yet, right?
Nope.
I'm willing to bet you that's going to be one of the...
either.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the expansions. You can bet on it because...
Oh, definitely.
The main reason why they included the Koreans in Civ 5 was because it increased sales, because they liked the game in Korea. So... yeah. I'd like to see some more Native Americans. I mean, I'm tired of the Aztecs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Aztecs really annoy the hell out of me. Not... not the civilization itself, but the leader just gets on my nerves. He's just hopping around and just pointing his spear at the camera. It's just, I just want to slap him several times.
Yeah, I think that's the point of Monty, is to aggravate you and want you to take him out.
Yeah. So, anyways, aside from Civ 6, have you been playing any new games, Scott?
New games? No, just Minecraft and Civ 6.
Okay. So, I haven't been playing, by the way, I haven't been playing Civ 6 as much as I could, because I've had a very busy thing, but it has that thing, you know, in which I'm drawn to my computer, I'm on my computer and say, you know what, I think I'm going to play a few hours of Civ. How about you, TJ?
I started, but I haven't gotten too far into it. Alloboy, which came out, I think, yesterday. Very cute, very awesome. It's a pixelated platformer, and you play as a half-human, half-owl person, and it's looking very fun. It's got a great soundtrack. It's got great art to it. It just looks like it's going to be as fun, if not better, than Shovel Knight and Ori and the Blind Forest. It's got those vibes to it.
Look nice.
If you liked those games, I think you'll like Alloboy.
Yeah. I couldn't play it last week because there was this weird bug in which season pass holders of Batman Telltale series had to pay for episode 3. They fixed that. So I played it after we did our recording, and dear God, that is the most depressing episode yet. Everything goes wrong in that episode. I'm hoping that that's the darkest before the dawn, because I really don't want to play Batman The Walking Dead. And I don't mean there are zombies in it. I just mean I don't want a freaking depressing Batman game.
Yeah, that's why I was having trouble with Chapter 2 of King's Quest. It was depressing me, and I didn't want to go through that, basically doing a Sophia's Choice with these people, which are King's Graham's people, and it's like, you have to let one of them die or something to get out, and I don't really like that idea. I don't want to do that.
See, but I think Telltale wanted to ask themselves, what's the worst possible thing that could happen to Bruce Wayne? Not Batman, what's the worst possible thing that could happen to Bruce Wayne? I mean, finding out his parents were criminals. His best friend is defigured, or Vicky Vale, and spoiler, okay, everybody who's playing Batman and hasn't played episode 3 yet doesn't want to hear this, skip ahead a minute or so. Vicky Vale turns out to be the evil mastermind behind everything and infects Bruce, so he embarrasses himself in public after he's kicked out as CEO of Wayne Enterprises. I mean, come on, stop! Let's have some happy endings. I hope it's a triumphant. I hope it's like Return to Oz, in which everything's dark and depressing, but at least the ending is really happy.
Yeah.
So, Scott, I saw an item earlier today that you might find interesting, and that is Gunmetal Arcadia Zero is free for 1 week, and it's basically a Zelda 2 type of game.
And where is this?
I'll send you it's on PC, I believe. I'll send you the link.
Okay.
So Silicon Era only does PC anyway. So obviously it's not Zelda 2. I think it's actually a futuristic thing, but if you like Zelda 2, it's basically an homage to it.
Cool.
So I sent you the link. It's completely free for the There's also a Greenlight campaign for it, so it's not yet on Steam. So they should have the link how to get the game itself. So yeah, it's a nice little indie game, and it looks a lot like a futuristic Zelda game.
Yeah, it does.
So, anyways, I'm going to put the link in the show notes for anybody who wants to check it out. Because, as we've said, you know, and as Paul has said, that Zelda 2 is the odd episode of the Zelda series, because it's a 2D side-scroller. It's also very hard. But it still has its own, you know, merits, and they're experimenting. So yeah, Gunmetal Arcadia Zero. Just in case you wanted to Google search for it, it's also in the Humble Store. Anyways, so last week we went a little bit long, and the reason why the episode took so long to come out is I had to release it on the first day of the month because we were out of space on the server. So this episode should be shorter, even though we're rambling on like this. But there's some interesting stuff this week. So our first news item. Star Wars Battlefront 2 coming fall 2017, EA suggests. This comes to us from GameSpot. The previously announced Star Wars Battlefront 2 will be coming out in the fall 2017. Electronic Arts CFO Blake Jorgensen strongly suggested during an earnings call today. He said it's coming, quote-unquote, a year from now, and he added, "We're working very hard on making sure that it's an extremely deep and engaging offering. The game will have, quote-unquote, bigger and better worlds." Jorgensen also said that it will make use of content from the new movies, which I'm guessing is The Force Awakens and not, you know, the prequel trilogy. Though he didn't name any outright, the first Battlefront only featured content from the original Star Wars trilogy, which isn't entirely true because Jakku never appeared in the original trilogy.
Right.
You know. EA plans to release one new Star Wars game every year for the next 3 to 4 years. That EA is making a Battlefront sequel is no surprise. The first game has shipped 14 million copies, which was ahead of the company's expectations for the shooter. DICE is developing Star Wars Battlefront 2. They also did the first one. Alongside another EA developer, Motive Studios. Titanfall developer Respawn is making their own third-person action-adventure game. While this one is actually the intriguing one to me. Dead Space Studio is making a Star Wars game under the leadership of Uncharted director Amy Hennig.
So, interesting.
Now, it's interesting that they would say it's going to be a lot deeper and engaging because, of course, the main complaint of Star Wars Battlefront, the one that was released last year, is that it's as shallow as a piece of toast.
Yeah, I mean, I think I talked about it on here quite a bit. It was an experience and very, very cinematic and very... It had a lot of fun nods to the films, but the gameplay was just it was shooter for babies.
And you know what? For some reason, a game called Star Wars didn't have any Star Wars. You never got to take those ships up into space and fight.
Yeah, I didn't really have high expectations for this game, or you know, I don't for this one either. So I just Yeah, you're not in space, you're not, it's just not, I don't know, EA is just disappointing to me all around.
But you see, the big thing was that when Star Wars Battlefront was announced, it was like everybody got really excited. Ooh, DICE is making a Star Wars game, and it's going to be Battlefield, but in the Star Wars universe. and they, you know, a lot of people were shocked. Well... You have to think that it came from above to make the game as accessible, and I put that around quotes, accessible as possible, to capture a wide viewing audience as possible, which is like saying, we want this movie to have a PG-13.
I remember a lot of people not being very optimistic about the game and thinking it was going to suck, and lo and behold, it does. And when you do this whole game as wide as possibility, I think you lose a lot of what makes a game good and have character and be interesting. Because sometimes some games just aren't going to interest a person, and you should really try to focus on getting that audience that you want and not try to get everybody, because not everybody's going to play a game.
But you know the funny thing is, you could slap Star Wars on a spreadsheet program and it'll sell 10 million copies. There really was no need to quote-unquote dumb it down, you know, or make it more accessible, because people are going to buy it anyway. They don't need to make it accessible. The Star Wars brand is your accessible.
I didn't buy it, so...
I didn't say that. Well, 14 million people did, apparently.
Yeah, and I was one of them.
14 million suckers.
Jeez, Scott, tell me how you feel about me.
Okay, I'm sorry. They wanted a good game, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, TJ.
They're the evil bastards.
Talk about your experience with... by the way, before you do, and the thing is that Battlefield 1 is getting a lot of good reviews and a lot of positive feedback, despite some of the glitches that come from every Battlefield. So it's not like DICE forgot how to make a Battlefield game.
Right.
So, TJ, you played it a lot. What was your initial, reaction to Star Wars Battlefront?
It was beautiful. It was awesome to get in the ships, and the ships have always been my favorite part of the game. I had like X-wing toys and A-wing toys when I was little, and I just always have loved the ship designs of the original trilogy. So getting into those was really fun. The nods to the trilogy. There were so many nods in that game, and they were so there were a few that were pretty clever. Like they had this one on one of the one of the tutorial levels, where some stormtroopers are walking around in the background as you're getting a tutorial, and one of them runs into a staircase and bonks his head on it as he's walking under, which is a nod to an iconic little bit in the film. And that was really fun. It's just unfortunate that the nostalgia begins to wear off once you're probably about maybe 10 hours in, and it comes to be that it's like it's a Battlefield game, but it's not, in the way that they took all of the things that made Battlefield like unique out of it to make it just like everyone is just about the same class. The squads are just completely borked. No one really has a squad, so no one follows each other. You can spawn on people that you're assigned to, but you don't really have the squads of the Battlefield games.
Let me ask you a question. Did you play the original Star Wars Battlefront games?
I did not.
Okay. So, reading between the lines, what do you expect from Star Wars Battlefront 2?
I expect them to maybe try to follow on the success they've been getting out of the formula for Battlefield 1 and apply that to Star Wars Battlefront 2.
You know, the thing is that Battlefield 1 actually jumps around through the World War 1, you know, different places, and that fits in perfectly with Star Wars, because then you can jump around in various movies and settings. You know, I mean, they did that with Star Wars Battlefront. But if they copy the format of Star Wars, and here's the thing. While it's cool to be Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader or Boba Fett and all that stuff, I think people want to exist in that universe alongside them and not actually be them.
Yeah. You mean like make the heroes AI characters and you have to protect them or something like that?
Or just be characters in the thing without them even being around. You know, I'm pretty sure it'll be interesting. I mean, the hero thing would be great as one of those odd multiplayer things like Griffball is in Halo, that sort of stuff. You know, just make it something alternative but not a part of the main game or the main gameplay mechanic, in which all of a sudden, for whatever reason, the Emperor drops into Hoth.
mm-hmm.
You know, so it'll be interesting. I'm on a side note, because they mentioned Titan Respawn, is that I'm waffling on whether to get Titanfall 2. I mean, it's getting B minuses basically, and I hear a lot of divided opinions on the campaign. Some say it sucks. Some say it's brilliant. You know, some say it's trite. Some say it's fun. The problem with Titanfall 2, of course, is that as a multiplayer game, you don't want to wait too long to get into it, because either everybody will be gone or everybody will be overpowered and leveled up, and you'll just be walking in as this green guy with nothing, you know. So, and also everybody's learned the maps and you haven't.
So. It's a busy season for shooters, too. In the span of 2 weeks, we've had Battlefield 1, Titanfall 2, and upcoming this Friday is, which this podcast will be out by then, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. All right. Journey and Flower Studio, that game company, teases its next title. This is from Eurogamer. Journey, Flower, and Flow developer, that game company, has revealed the following first images of the upcoming game. Details on it are slim, but that game company co-founder Genova Chen noted on the studio's blog that it is a game about giving, and offered a couple other images, noting the game will be released in 2017. One image depicts children holding hands and frolicking, which seems like a very that game company thing to do. Another shows a candle about to ignite on an unlit wick, back in 2014, that game company received $7 billion in funding.
$7 billion? Wow.
What?
I don't think they got $7 billion.
No, they said $7
million. I thought you said $7 billion. It sounded like
I said $7 million.
Okay, you know, we're going to play this back at some point, and we're going to find out who's right.
All right.
Go ahead.
From Capital Today and a team of other benefactors for its upcoming title. That can only be a good thing, as Journey briefly bankrupted the company before the game launched to rave reviews and solid sales. In the meantime, that game company is currently hiring. At the moment, the studio is looking for a network engineer, a senior technical gameplay engineer, and a wonderfully titled role of feel engineer. That one requires a desire to create meaningful, enriching experiences that touch and inspire players. I like this idea that we're getting another game of this series. I thought they were three and done, so I'm glad that they're doing more.
So did either of you play either Journey, Flower, or Flow?
Yes. I played Journey.
Okay. I played Journey and Flower. I did not play Flow yet.
Well, Flow really is Flower, Journey. Just without flowers.
I really liked Journey, and I think a lot of people, certain people, didn't really understand the game concept very well, because I thought it was just a fun journey where you're traveling towards this mountain that's very clearly in the sky that you're supposed to go to, and as you're going there, you find these ruins and these weird things floating around. And Flower, it was fun because it had this classical or orchestral theme soundtrack, and you're these petals in the wind, and you make the music as you're activating the flowers and reviving the land around you. So it's a very, very atmospheric games that this company makes, and I enjoy them.
It's extremely unconventional the way they go about it, too.
Yeah.
Like, every That Game Company game is absurdly different from every other one.
Well, one of the things that they all have in common is they're all basically abstract. They make a lot of abstract games.
Yeah.
Which is their thing. I mean, they're trying to do something different. You know, I think it's artsy without being pretentious.
Yeah, it's just feel-good stuff, which is why they're hiring a feel engineer.
Unless it's Donald Trump. He has his own feel engineer. Anyways. So, go on, teacher.
I'm interested, just because, like, there's a lot of video games out there, but, like, not all of them have that feel that just make you feel good while you're playing it. Like, I could put a couple in that category. Like, Little Big Planet does that for me. It's charming to a point where you just can't help but be in a good mood while you're playing it. Whereas if you're playing a game like, let's say, Super Meat Boy, it just pisses you off after a while because you keep dying. Yeah, or even like, let's see. There's a bunch of games like that where just like you enjoy it, but it gets frustrating.
There are some levels in Little Big Planet 1, particularly the Russian Wheel of Death and the Japanese Wheel, and those levels really frustrated me a lot.
Well, you know, the entire point of Super Meat Boy is that it doesn't matter if you die a lot, if you just respawn like that, if you respawn immediately, then it's sort of like shooting a gun, you know, okay, I got, no, let me do it again, let me do it again.
Mm-hmm.
There was a game, I forgot the name of it, it wasn't Fly to the, what was the name of that flying game? Fly to the, you know, once you were in the ship and you're flying straight through, and it's something like Fly to the Sun or Fly, you know, that was a game that was frustrating, but also, you know, it's like, I have to do this, you know. I forgot it, because I broke this story. I wrote a lot of articles on it. Well, not a lot, but a few articles on it on Game Watcher, and crying out loud, Race to the Sun, I think it's called. Race the Sun. Yeah. So it was sort of like you just have to keep trying over and over and over again. Anyways.
Yeah.
So for those of you, the images they had were sort of like a sky blue, and it really gave me the impression of a blue sky, you know, in clouds because the figures are all in white. So I'm wondering if it has something to do with being flying or in the air. But they also said it's about giving. So in the other... See, but that's sort of like what the other games are, aren't they? Like in Flower, you're trying to give the water, or what? I forgot what it's called, to other flowers to make them grow, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. And in Journey, there's a lot of sharing going on, because when you meet someone else, it's sort of like, I think you have to play the music together, or, because it's been a while since I saw Journey, and I didn't play it. I just remember these little triangles walking around the desert and interacting.
They were like pieces of red paper or flags or whatever floating in the air, and you piped the music, and you had to like unlock puzzles to get through.
See, with Journey though, it was designed so that even if you like, you could complete it, other people could join in. You just like ran into them randomly, but you could also just complete it on your own. That's the way it was designed, was that no one could affect your game. They could only help it.
Yeah. But that's just it, you know. The thing is that a lot of that game company's stuff is about sharing and giving, you know. Mm-hmm. And this would be right along the lines. When they say it's a game about giving, it could be Journey 2 for all we know. So it isn't. Because, like I said, they have certain color schemes for the games. Because Journey was sort of like a red-yellow game, you mm-hmm. know? Flower was sort of, it was sort of like a yellow-blue game, maybe?
Yeah, but there was a lot of green grass. You're supposed to revive it.
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, red-green, you know, with green as well. While this game's color scheme is going to be blue and white.
Mm-hmm.
So
that'd be icy.
Yeah. Also, I have to wonder about the other benefactors. I'm wondering if... see, the thing is that the games that they made were exclusively on PlayStation because Sony, you know, backed them. Yeah. And it sounds like they're backing themselves this time. So it'll be interesting to see how many platforms this comes on. If it's just on PC, you know?
Yeah, I think before it was that they had to do the three games for Sony only because, like, Sony backed them. So now they can do a fourth game for any platform.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, they already have a huge fan base among PlayStation owners. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do. And you know what? I'd love to see if they do multi-platform. I'd like to see cross-platform and everything, if Microsoft will allow it, and if Sony will allow it.
Yeah.
So you have PC, PlayStation, and Xbox users all playing together, as well as Wii, aka Switch, either one.
Oh. Yeah, actually, there was something I had noticed. I think Nintendo has stopped production on the Wii U's. Was that true? I think
yes.
I saw articles about that.
Yeah,
the last one rolls off the line this Friday.
Yeah, because I remember we were reading that it wasn't going to replace the Wii U, but it looks like the Switch is indeed replacing the Wii U.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually that was earlier today. They reported it that Wii U is ending production November 4th.
Yeah.
So let's all give a little farewell to the console that never was. I mean, it was just two Wii's strapped tape, what's it called, duct tape together, as a certain character might say. The thing is that the Wii U might have been really big had Nintendo not really angered the core crowd by catering to the ultra-casual, a.k.a. the people who bought the Wii U, or the original Wii, because it was another Furby, it was another Teddy Ruxpin, it was another Power Ranger. It was just something that no one could have, and you couldn't buy it, and they played it for a couple of months, and then they just said, okay, that's fine. And they never bought software for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is that who is going to buy Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't bought a game for it since, I guess, Super Smash Brothers, which was months upon months ago.
Yeah, it's sort of like getting a Mario Kart game. I mean, that's a game that's guaranteed to sell on whatever platform it is on.
Yeah. But it's just there's nothing interesting in there. I look, but like the only cool stuff coming out is either on the Nintendo eShop, and I'm not, and generally it's like old school games that I can get on my 3DS, and I probably have, so I don't do it. Or well, the... it's
go ahead.
Or it's like it's just parlor games. That has always been a thing that bothered me about the Wii and the Wii U, is that it was the perfect platform for parlor games.
The thing that bugs me is that Bayonetta 2 is produced by Nintendo, so it's never going to be on any other system. You have to get a Wii U to play Bayonetta 2. And while Bayonetta 2 bombed both on both the first one and especially the second one, Bayonetta 2 bombed so badly, I don't think... You know what? I think it didn't even pass 100,000 sales in the U.S. I'm going to check this out right now, but I think it was one of the worst bombing games and the thing is that I love Bayonetta. I love the first Bayonetta. That was one of my favorite games. And, you know, not being able to play Bayonetta 2, it just burned my... You know, I hated that. You know, now I know how Final Fantasy users felt for a while. you know this Nintendo game that you love really a lot? Well, guess what? It's not... So here are the numbers of sales of Bayonetta 2. Are you ready for this? 320,000 units in North America, 280,000 units in Europe, and 10,000 units in Japan, for a grand total of 750,000 units altogether. That was a bomb. And I'm going to tell you something. The first Bayonetta was a huge, huge, huge hit in Japan. It was the first game that was ever released for the Xbox 360 that earned a 40-40 from Famitsu. So, yeah, and I hope at some point something like Rare happens, you know, in which we finally be able to play Bayonetta 2. Although I wonder, maybe I can get a Wii U and Bayonetta 2 for under $60. So it'll be like paying less than $60 for a game.
Yeah.
So, anyways, last thoughts on this? On basically the Wii U being shut down.
It seems like a real shame, but I guess we'll either move on to a Wii or a Switch. I don't, actually, do they make Wiis anymore? Or is it...
No, they stopped production on those two.
Oh, okay, so basically we are moving on to the Switch, it looks like, yeah.
But remember, the Switch isn't replacing the Wii U, just remember that.
I mean, I don't see it as that bad of a thing, because, like, obviously, the way we're talking about it, it's a dead console. Why continue to spend money on it if it's not going to do and if it's not going to move anything? You might as well cut your losses and move on to the thing that people actually care about.
Also, it's called the Wii U, and no one's going to mourn something called the Wii U.
That's true. And there's always emulators for those games you still want to play.
I mean, look, Switch is a good name. It's not exactly the most inspired name in the world, but at least it's a word that you don't feel embarrassed to say.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to go home and play with my Wii. The gods cry when you play with your Wii.
Switch really is not inspiring, like you said. It's kind of boring and dull.
Yeah, but you know what? You could say I'd rather fight than Switch, or I'd fight for a Switch. Oh. I don't know. It's at least it's something that isn't Wii U.
Yeah, that's true.
It's got some power to it. You kids get inside, or I'll switch you.
Thank you, Adrian Peterson. Anyways, we're going to move on to the last item. Go ahead, TJ.
New teaser sets Mass Effect Andromeda 600 years after the last game. From PC Gamer. Applications are now being taken for a new intergalactic exploration program called the Andromeda Initiative. Orientation, a trailer, is set to begin on November 7th, but you can get an idea of what it's all about, which, in case there's any question, would be BioWare's next Mass Effect game, by way of a new, brief, and thoroughly stirring trailer that promises great things for those bold enough to seize the moment. The most noteworthy detail is that Mass Effect Andromeda apparently takes place around 600 years after the events of Mass Effect 3. Some uncertain time after the events of the original trilogy drove humanity back to their home, circling boring old Sol, the Andromeda Initiative is recruiting brave adventurers to seek out, quote, a future beyond the Milky Way. If we're understanding it correctly, we're picking up the story 600 years later in Mass Effect Andromeda. Applying for this unprecedented program of exploration beyond the limits of the Milky Way will, in fact, get you on the Mass Effect Insider mailing list, which isn't exactly, quote, where no one has gone before kind of thing. It's still awfully handy for fans of the series, though. And the important thing is that this means we're finally going to start getting a real look at what's coming in Mass Effect Andromeda, one of the most anticipated RPGs to come along in years. And not a moment too soon. It's currently scheduled for release in early 2017.
And that's probably going to be March 21st, 2017. People have figured it out already that that's more or less the date that it's going to be released. Because of certain things, like the art book is being released on the same day, and they said that they would release the art book on the same day as the game. There's a lot of other stuff that they found out, like, well, I don't know if we discussed it on the program, but, you know, it's going to be the writers, and that man that you saw on the bridge of the ship in one of the Andromeda trailers, that's their father.
Mm-hmm.
Their mother is apparently dead. Which is why you see a rider on dog tags. That's her dog tags. And, of course, you can either play as the brother or the sister this time around. So you'll always have one or the other doing something while you're doing what you're doing. You know? Yeah. So I'm really excited for this. I would have rather seen a Mass Effect 4, and I know exactly how you would do it. But, I mean, it's Mass Effect. And, you know, there's going to be another Mako. So... TJ?
I'm excited at the possibility that there could be maybe a little bit of co-op in the main story this time around. I think that might be fun for a Mass Effect game.
Yeah. How about you, Scott? Alan? Oh, whatever your name is, Scott. Right.
Helen? No, I don't really have too much to add here. Hopefully it's a good story. Hopefully it's better than the previous one. I like the idea of having a brother or sister, and maybe you can co-op both of those characters. Be interesting.
I just had a cynical way of realizing why it's being set far in the future is because the save games, you know, you're going to a new system, so forget save games. You just start off fresh and maybe have a questionnaire. At the very beginning, was Shepard a female or male, and what ending did you choose? That's it, nothing else.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like what they're going to do. I mean, I don't know, I got a lot of satisfaction from when I imported my save from one Trials in the Sky game to the next, because it didn't just give me like a reward, a bonus item, but it also had a lot of extra dialogue. The characters would say, hey, yeah, I fixed your problem the last time I met you, and it was kind of nice. It made it feel like it mattered. It was, like, very rewarding. So to not import the save game, it just, I don't know, it loses a lot of that reward and investment.
I think it's interesting to tell a different story for once. I mean, I like those characters from the original trilogy. Garrus Vakarian is, like, one of my favorite characters of all time. I romanced that dude. But I think... I think it's interesting to take that universe and make it not about Commander Shepard and his pedestal to save the universe for once. Yeah. Or his or her, I suppose. I think it's interesting to just tell a story that exists in that same time where other people that aren't the great Commander Shepard are dealing with it. And
I agree with that. I think more universes or fandom universes should do that, where, you know, you had, like, in the Star Wars universe, you have the Luke and all that, and the Skywalker saga, but now we have these other movies coming out that are going to focus on other characters that are also dealing with these situations, but from a different perspective, and they'll probably, you know, like, Rogue Squadron, and there's going to be, I think, a Ben Kenobi one and a Han Solo and a I think they're maybe working on a Boba Fett one or something. And it's really nice to expand and enrich those universes by focusing on other characters.
You know that, for those you don't know, November 7th is N7 Day, which is when all the big Mass Effect announcements are made. And one thing I'm hoping they announce, because they keep on denying it, but the Mass Effect trilogy remastered, and EA keeps on waffling over. You know, a couple of months ago, they said it would have been too easy to do just a remastered. No, I don't care. I mean, if you're not going to release it as backwards compatible, then I want you to remaster it, because I'm not in the mood to pay for the PC version, you know, and have to buy all of the DLC that I already own. So I'm just hoping, you know, there'll be an announcement about Mass Effect Trilogy for next gen consoles.
I don't see what, like, at this point, with so much interest in things like this, with our Red Dead Redemptions and things like that, I don't see why you wouldn't go that route. Like,
because businesses have this calculator which says, well, we can't do this, it would cost to whatever, you know.
Look at Red Dead and look at Skyrim and tell me that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, how many PlayStation fans are still screaming blue murder that they still don't have Red Dead Redemption on the PS4?
Yeah, we're only just now getting it on PlayStation now, which is a bummer.
And PC gamers are irate that it never was released at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, anyways, crossing our fingers for the remastered. It makes total sense, which is never a reason that anybody will do anything, unfortunately. Sometimes common sense never enters the fray. But, you know, people will buy it. I mean, how many times have people bought the original Zelda? The 1985 gold cartridge Zelda.
Yeah, it's true.
They've re-released the original Mega Man games, like, at least 8 different times across generations.
Oh, I'll buy the Ultima games again. So, anyways, hold on, I gotta go back to this stupid page here. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and your gaming industry articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. So, yeah, we already said what our favorite Civ 6 civilizations are so far. So, if you're playing Civ 6, let us know what your favorite Civ 6 is. We'll see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.